Okay, so today we're going deep on some serious pharmacology.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a stack of PDFs here.
Okay.
Aspirin.pdf, diphenhydramine, hydrochloride.pdf, epinephrine 1.1000, 1.7000.pdf, furosemide.pdf, morphine sulfate.pdf, and nitroglycerin.pdf.
Wow, that's
All about essential medications.
yeah, this is like the core
This
stuff.
is the good stuff.
Yeah.
This is the kind of insider info that could honestly make you the most informed person at your next cocktail party.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
Yeah,
let's get started.
you aren't just any medications. These are like the cornerstones of emergency and critical care.
Right.
Like really understanding these is so important for everybody, not just healthcare professionals,
Absolutely.
because you never know when this knowledge might come in handy.
Yeah, you really don't.
Yeah.
All right, let's kick things off with aspirin.
Okay.
Or ASA.
Yeah.
The aspirin.pdf says it works by preventing those tiny blood cells called platelets from
Right.
sticking together and forming clots.
Exactly. It stops the formation of something called thromboxane A2,
Okay.
which is basically the glue that holds those clots together.
Oh, so that's why the document mentions prolonged bleeding time?
Yeah.
It's like flipping a switch. Aspirin helps prevent clots. It
Right.
also means you might bleed a bit longer if you get a cut.
Exactly. It's a very delicate balance,
Yeah.
but a lifesaver in situations like a suspected heart attack where a clot can be deadly.
Oh, for sure.
On the flip side, that's why you would always want to tell your doctor if you were taking aspirin before any kind of surgery.
Right. Makes total sense.
Yep.
Now, here's something I found fascinating.
Okay.
The aspirin.pdf says to chew for faster absorption. I've always just swallowed it whole.
Chewing increases the surface area of the pill,
Oh.
allowing it to be absorbed into your bloodstream more quickly.
Okay.
In a heart attack, those extra few minutes could make a big difference.
Wow, that's a game changer.
Yeah.
Speaking of fast-acting medications, let's move on to diphenhydramine,
Oh.
better known as Benadryl.
Yep.
According to diphenhydramine-hydrochloride.pdf, it's an antihistamine. Now, I know that histamines are involved in allergic reactions,
Yeah.
but remind me how that all works.
So think of histamines as like the messengers that trigger your body's allergic response.
Okay.
When you encounter an allergen, your body releases histamines, which cause those familiar symptoms like sneezing, itching, and hives.
Right.
Benadryl blocks those histamines from binding to receptors, preventing those
So it's
symptoms.
like intercepting the message before it reaches its destination.
Precisely. And that's why it's called an H1 receptor antagonist.
Okay.
It's blocking those specific receptors that histamines would normally attach to.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But here's a curveball.
Okay.
Diphenhydramine-hydrochloride.pdf mentions that high doses can cause delirium and hallucinations. Why is that?
Seems like a strange side effect.
Yeah, for an allergy medication.
So it has to do with the fact that Benadryl can cross the blood-brain barrier, which is like a protective shield around your brain.
Okay.
In high doses, it can interfere with a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine,
Okay.
which is involved in memory thinking and even muscle control. This disruption can lead to those anticholinergic effects you mentioned.
So stick to the recommended dose, right?
Absolutely.
Now let's talk about epinephrine,
Okay.
also known as adrenaline.
Right.
Epinephrine 1.1000, 1.2000.pdf says it mimics your body's fight or flight response. Can you break that down for me?
Imagine you're facing a sudden threat like a wild animal.
Okay.
Your body goes into overdrive,
Oh.
your heart races, your breathing gets faster, and your blood vessels constrict, sending more blood to your muscles.
Right.
Epinephrine essentially does the same thing, but it's triggered by the medication, not a scary bear.
Okay, so it's like flipping that fight or flight switch on demand.
Exactly.
But the epinephrine 1.1000, 1.11000.pdf mentions that the dosage changes dramatically depending on what you're treating,
Yeah.
from a cardiac arrest to anaphylaxis to.
Right? Each of those situations requires a different level of intervention.
Okay.
For example, in cardiac arrest, the heart has stopped beating effectively.
Right.
So you need a high dose of epinephrine delivered directly into the bloodstream intravenously to jumpstart it.
Okay.
But for something like croup, where the airways are inflamed, a lower dose delivered through a nebulizer directly to the lungs is usually sufficient.
So it's like having a Swiss Army knife of medications,
Yeah.
each tool designed for a specific purpose.
Exactly. And that's why the document stresses that 5-A epinephrine is restricted to cardiac arrest.
Right.
It's a very powerful drug
Yeah.
with significant cardiovascular effects.
Yeah.
And using it inappropriately can be very dangerous.
That's a serious reminder that these medications are not to be taken lightly.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to furosemide.
Okay.
Commonly known as Lasix.
Right.
The furosemide.pdf calls it a loop diuretic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that diuretics make you urinate more.
Yeah.
But what's so special about this loop business?
This is where it gets really interesting.
Oh, okay.
Your kidneys are like these intricate filtering systems.
Okay.
And furosemide works by targeting a specific part of that system called the loop of Henle.
Okay, so it's not just making you pee more, it's targeting a specific process in your kidneys.
Exactly. The loop of Henle is where your body reabsorbs water and electrolytes.
Right.
Furosemide blocks that reabsorption, essentially flushing out excess fluid and salt.
So it's like turning up the dial on your kidney's filtration system?
Perfect analogy.
Wow.
That's why furosemide is so effective in treating conditions like congestive heart failure.
Okay.
Where fluid buildup can be a major problem.
And I noticed that furosemide.pdf mentions flushing the 5E line before and after administration.
Yes.
What's the logic behind that?
Furosemide can be quite potent.
Right.
So flushing the line ensures that the correct dose is delivered.
Okay.
And prevents any potential interactions with other medications that might be present in the 5E line.
Gotcha.
It's all about patient safety.
All right, now let's talk about something a bit stronger.
Okay.
Morphine sulfate.
Right.
Morphinesulfate.pdf describes it as a narcotic analgesic, which means it relieves pain and can even produce euphoria.
Right. Morphine works by binding to opioid receptors in your brain and spinal cord.
Uh-huh.
Essentially altering the way your body perceives and responds to pain signals.
I've heard that morphine is incredibly effective for severe pain.
Oh, yeah.
But morphinesulfate.pdf also lists a whole bunch of contraindications.
Yes.
Meaning situations where it shouldn't be used.
Right.
Like, why would some injuries make morphine a bad choice?
So, for example, in a head injury.
Okay.
Morphine can mask neurological symptoms.
Oh.
Making it harder to assess the severity of the injury.
Gotcha.
And in someone with low blood pressure, morphine could make it even worse, potentially leading to shock.
So it's not just about relieving pain. It's about understanding the potential risks and making sure it's the right medication for the situation. And speaking of specific situations, the document also mentions morphine's role in managing pulmonary edema.
Yes.
Which is fluid buildup in the lungs.
Right. Morphine reduces preload.
Okay.
Which is the amount of blood returning to the heart.
Right.
By doing so, it reduces the workload on the heart and allows it to pump more efficiently.
Uh-huh.
Giving the lungs a chance to clear the excess fluid.
So it's not just about pain relief. It's about using its physiological effects strategically.
Exactly.
Now, for our last medication, let's talk about nitroglycerin.
Okay.
Nitroglycerin.pdf describes it as a vasodilator primarily affecting veins.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know that means it widens blood vessels.
Yeah.
But how does that translate to treating angina?
So angina is chest pain caused by reduced blood flow to the heart.
Yeah.
Nitroglycerin widens the veins, allowing blood to pool in them.
Okay.
This actually reduces the amount of blood returning to the heart, which in turn eases the heart's workload and relieves the pain.
So pooling blood in the veins actually helps the heart. That seems counterintuitive.
It is, but it works because it reduces the heart's workload.
Oh, okay.
Think of it this way. If you have to carry a heavy backpack up a hill,
okay,
it's easier if you can lighten the load, even if it means carrying some of the weight in your hands instead.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
And speaking of counterintuitive things, the document has a big warning about a dangerous interaction with Viagra.
Yes. Both nitroglycerin and Viagra are vasodilators.
Right.
So taking them together can cause a severe drop in blood pressure, which can be life-threatening.
So definitely not a combination to mess with.
Definitely not.
You know, we've only scratched the surface of these medications.
Yeah.
And I'm already amazed by how complex they are.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It really is.
Each of these medications has a story to tell.
Uh-huh.
And understanding their nuances can make a real difference in how we use them.
We're back and ready to delve deeper into this fascinating world of these essential medications.
Yeah.
We've talked about how they work, but aspirin.pdf mentions different dosages for aspirin.
Yeah.
What determines which dosage is right for a patient?
So dosage is really crucial in pharmacology. And for aspirin, it all depends on what you're trying to achieve.
Okay.
A low dose is typically used for daily preventative measures, like reducing the risk of heart attack or stroke.
Okay, so it's like taking a low-dose aspirin is like an insurance policy for your heart.
Right. Think of it as giving your cardiovascular system a little daily tune-up.
Gotcha. But what about higher doses?
A higher dose is used in acute situations like a suspected heart attack.
Oh, okay.
In that case, you need a more powerful and immediate anti-clotting effect to potentially stop the heart attack in its tracks.
So it's all about tailoring the dose to the situation.
Right.
And speaking of tailoring treatment, epinephrine 1.1200, 1.10000.pdf was pretty specific about how to administer epinephrine.
Yeah.
5V injections, intramuscular injections, even using a nebulizer.
Uh-huh.
Why so many different methods for the same medication?
So the way you administer medication can dramatically affect how quickly and effectively it reaches its target.
Okay.
5V injection is the fastest route getting the medication directly into the bloodstream.
Right.
That's why it's preferred in emergencies like cardiac arrest, where every second counts.
So it's like taking the express lane to get that medication where it needs to go.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the other methods?
Intramuscular injection, like using an EpiPen, is a bit slower.
Okay.
But still very effective for conditions like anaphylaxis.
Okay.
And a nebulizer delivers the medication directly to the lungs.
Uh-huh.
Making it ideal for treating something like croup, where their airways are inflamed.
It's incredible how each administration method is carefully chosen for maximum impact.
Yeah.
And speaking of careful choices, epinephrine 1.1000, 1.10000.pdf also mentioned different concentrations, like 1.1000 and 1.10000. What's the significance of those ratios?
Those ratios represent the concentration of epinephrine in the solution. A 1.1000 solution is more concentrated, usually used for intramuscular injections.
Oh, okay.
In situations like anaphylaxis, where you need a fast-acting dose.
So it's like a more potent version of the medication.
Exactly.
Okay.
But a 1.0000 solution is more diluted and often used for ARV administration in cardiac arrest, where a more controlled and gradual delivery is preferred.
So it's all about precision.
It's all about precision.
Yeah. I'm seeing a theme here. Precision is key when it comes to these medications.
For sure.
Speaking of which, furosemide.pdf mentions that furosemide should be administered slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Administering furosemide too quickly can cause a rapid fluid shift in the body.
Okay.
Leading to complications like a sudden drop in blood pressure or an imbalance of electrolytes. Uh-huh. Think of it like trying to drain a pool too quickly.
Okay.
You might end up with a messy and uneven result.
So slow and steady wins the race when it comes to furosemide.
Absolutely.
Now, we've touched on some potential side effects with these medications, like the delirium and hallucinations with high doses of diphenhydramine.
Yeah.
What other side effects should we be aware of?
So every medication comes with potential side effects, and it's really important to weigh the benefits against the risks.
Right.
For example, with aspirin, bleeding is a major concern, especially for those with a history of bleeding disorders or recent surgery.
That makes sense, given how aspirin affects blood clotting.
Yeah.
What about the other medications?
Nitroglycerin, being a vasodilator,
right,
can cause a drop in blood pressure.
Okay.
That's why it's essential to use it cautiously in patients with certain types of heart attacks, where a drop in blood pressure could be dangerous.
And I remember our discussion about the dangerous interaction between nitroglycerin and Viagra.
Absolutely. The combined effect of two vasodilators can lead to a dangerously low blood pressure.
Right.
It's a stark reminder to always inform your doctor about all the medications you're taking, even over-the-counter ones.
Communication is key.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've covered mechanisms, dosages, administration, and side effects. What about contraindications? We touched on those with morphine.
Yes.
But can you remind me what they are and why they're important?
A contraindication is basically a situation or condition where a particular medication should not be used because it could be harmful.
So it's like a big red stop sign saying, don't use this medication in this specific situation.
Exactly. With morphine, for example, a head injury is a contraindication.
Right.
Morphine could mask vital neurological signs, making it harder to assess the severity of the injury.
Wow.
Similarly, if someone has very low blood pressure, giving them morphine could make it even worse.
Those are serious considerations. It makes you realize that prescribing medication is more than just matching a drug to a symptom. It's about understanding the whole patient and their individual circumstances.
That's the art and science of pharmacology, taking all these factors into account to make safe and effective treatment decisions.
Right?
It's about using medications as tools, not just throwing them at a problem.
This has been an eye-opening deep dive. So far, we've covered a lot of ground, from how these medications work to how they're administered, their potential side effects, and the critical concept of contraindications. I'm feeling much more informed already.
And we're not done yet. There's still more to explore in the final part of our deep dive. We'll look at how these medications are used in specific medical emergencies, showcasing their unique applications and the life-saving power they possess.
I'm eager to hear more. Let's wrap up this part of the deep dive and get ready to explore the next exciting layer of this pharmacological puzzle. All right, so we're back for the final part of our deep dive into these essential medications. We've talked about how they work.
Right.
We've talked about the potential side effects. Now I'm curious to see how all of these medications are applied in like real-world medical emergencies.
Yeah, that's where it gets really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these medications are more than just names on a page.
Right.
There are tools that can make a life or death difference in critical situations.
We talked about how epinephrine is a versatile tool used for everything from cardiac arrest to anaphylaxis to croup.
Right.
What about the other medications? Do they have specialized applications as well?
Absolutely. Take morphine, for instance.
Yeah.
We know it's a powerful pain reliever.
Right.
But morphinesulfate.pdf highlights its use in managing pulmonary edema, which is fluid buildup in the lungs.
Right. You explained how morphine can reduce preload, easing the strain on the heart.
Yeah.
Is that why it's so effective in treating pulmonary edema?
Precisely. Pulmonary edema is a serious condition where the heart struggles to pump effectively because of the fluid buildup in the lungs.
Okay.
Morphine helps by reducing the amount of blood returning to the heart, giving it a much-needed break, and allowing the lungs time to clear the excess fluid.
So it's not just about pain relief.
Right.
It's about using morphine's physiological effects strategically to manage a complex condition.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. What about nitroglycerin?
Okay.
We discussed its role in treating angina, but are there other situations where it might be used?
Interestingly, nitroglycerin can also be used for pulmonary edema, much like morphine.
Really? So we have two medications that can be used for the same condition, but they work in different ways.
Exactly. Morphine, as we discussed, reduces preload by decreasing venous return to the heart.
Okay.
Nitroglycerin, on the other hand, dilates the veins, allowing blood to pool away from the heart.
Uh-huh.
Both mechanisms ultimately achieve a similar goal, reducing the heart's workload in pulmonary edema.
So there's often more than one way to approach a medical problem.
Right.
And understanding how each medication works is key to choosing the best option for each patient.
Absolutely. That's what makes pharmacology so challenging and rewarding. It's about understanding the nuances of each medication and applying that knowledge in a way that benefits the patient.
You've given me a whole new appreciation for the complexity of medication management. It's not just about memorizing names and dosages. It's about making informed decisions based on a deep understanding of how these medications work.
It truly is. These six medications we've discussed today represent just a tiny fraction of the vast world of pharmacology. There's so much more to discover and learn.
Well, you've certainly provided us with a really solid foundation for understanding these essential medications.
Yeah.
But as always, this deep dive is just the beginning. Always consult with a medical professional for any health concerns or before making any decisions about your medications.
And I hope this deep dive has sparked your curiosity about the world of medicine and how medications work. Perhaps you'll be inspired to learn more about the history of drug discovery or explore the ethical considerations surrounding medication. The journey of learning never ends.
This has been an incredible deep dive, and I'm feeling inspired to continue learning.
Yeah.
What about you? What struck you as the most surprising or intriguing aspect of these medications? What other questions does this deep dive leave you with? We'd love to hear your thoughts. Until next time, happy learning.